Hi everyone, Ruben Dinarina here. I'm really excited today to interview Pari Rabindranathan. I hope I pronounced that right. It has a really interesting career journey and background in media for over 10 years. Pari was until recently the president and managing director of Bloomberg Media internationally, overseeing all the businesses outside of America. So yeah, Pari, thanks for agreeing to make this happen.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I think you got my name right, but even this is an abbreviated name. My full name is Parmeshwaran Rabindranathan. So I kind of spared you the trouble of spelling it all out.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Great. So to start off, tell me more about your background and how you actually got into media. Was this something you had planned from the beginning, something you always wanted to do, or did you kind of just fall into place?
It's a bit of both. I think when I did start out, I didn't really expect to be in media. It was really by accident in some ways when I got into a journalism course. Like everyone else, you know when you get into your graduation, you kind of know roughly what you like doing, and you kind of, you know, I liked writing, a few things, I liked social sciences essentially. So you kind of go into that path and then start figuring out where you kind of fit in. It was the same for me. And over time, I kind of figured out that journalism is something that actually I could look at. I joined a journalism school, Asian College of Journalism in India, which is one of the best there. And then kind of progressively went and studied more. Not all of it was journalism, and then got my first job. And that's really when I started looking into it more, because I think until you really get into a job, you really are not sure. You really don't know how it, no one can teach you the exact day-to-day dealings of being a journalist or what it takes to being one. And I think really all that you learn on the job, there's only that much a course or a program can teach you. And then, you know, once you get your feet wet, I think you kind of, over time, you kind of figure it out. And of course, you know, I loved it. It's the, you know, it's, you know, it's a, I mean, I, in, now when I look back at it, I think I'm made for it. I take risks. I like the risks part of it. I spent some time covering conflicts and everything else, which was part of that. I like writing, I like taking decisions, and I'm a big consumer of news myself. So being a journalist was in some ways, you know, made sense for me. I think the big shift for me was going from just being a journalist, of being a content man and managing newsrooms, to actually managing a business of news. I think that was a fairly big shift for me. It was a conscious shift. I always was interested in that part of the world. Most journalists are rarely interested in the business side, and frankly, vice versa as well, because it's a big Chinese wall in between. You rarely see journalists crossing the line, and I say crossing the line in a positive way. Crossing the line is, you cannot cross the line editorially, but you know, from a business point of view, it actually made, you know, it is, understanding the business is actually important. So for me, I think that was a big shift into taking over the business when I joined Bloomberg. I did parts of it before, but never to this extent. At Bloomberg, I kind of was asked to go and build out the television business initially, and then build out the media businesses, running both editorial as well as the commercial sides, which include sales and everything else. It's rare. I think it's unique in some ways, and I'm proud of it, that I can do both. And I've never really found a conflict between the two. I always say that when I attended a news editorial meeting, I'm wearing a sales hat. What can I sell? And when I'm in a sales meeting or in a commercial meeting, I'm wearing the editorial hat, so that nothing on the editorial side gets compromised. So that's a big shift for me from a career point of view. But that was a big, big highlight, because I think it taught me a lot of things that I would have probably never learned about the media industry and the industry we are in. And in a lot of ways, I hope I can play a part in growing the industry. So I think that was really the aim.
Great. So, I mean, talk about a bit about your journey to Bloomberg before that, working at CNN, Al Jazeera, where you really worked your way up. And as you were progressing in your career over time, did you feel you had any skill gaps? And what advice do you have for people who want to progress in their careers but don't have all the skills yet? Do you think it's important to have the skills to begin with, or learn along the way?
I think I had huge skill gaps. You know, I'll tell you where. I think when I joined a little, you know, small company at that time, TV18, which was running CNBC in India, and you know, like most small companies that really grow quickly, you know, you kind of, it was an explosion of growth. It was huge. India was growing at a huge rate at that time. Many of us grew with it. And in some ways grew too quickly, you know, and certainly in my case, I grew too quickly. I think grew so quickly that I think you kind of grow to a point where you kind of end up having fairly large skill gaps, which I never got filled because you really never did it. You know? So me, you know, one of the reasons I kind of, you know, quit CNBC at that time and took a 6-month break, and I kind of went and I did my own thing. I was in Afghanistan traveling for 6 months and then joined Al Jazeera, a step down really to fill gaps. I think there were huge gaps that I think I needed to fill. And I found some incredible colleagues in Al Jazeera who kind of in some ways helped me fill those gaps. And I grew quickly there again. And I think, you know, but it allowed me to this time have a slightly more paced, well-paced sort of approach to it where I could actually be a producer, be a field producer, kind of understand the stories a bit better. I was older. And it allowed me to, in some ways, grow as a journalist at Al Jazeera. So I think the important thing is that when you are growing quickly, and it quite often happens where you grow really too quickly, you don't realize how many gaps you have in your career and how many things you have not done. And I think you need to be able to know that you need to kind of in some ways take that on board and be able to go and fill that at some point. I mean, I'm not saying it's, look, not everyone gets the chance to do it either. But if you do get a chance, if you get the opportunity, I think you should continue to fill those. I mean, that could be education, that could be, you know, another job in another company where you take a step down, like I did, but it can take any form as long as it kind of fills those gaps.
Yeah, so you would say that sometimes it's actually better taking a position that's lower than what you would actually do, just in order to be able to fill those gaps, and that can help you.
Yes, and I would say do that in a bigger company, because I mean it's really easy to be a big fish in a small pond. I think it's, you know, it's really that's what happens, and people get comfortable in that little pond. You got to basically grow and learn more. You got to get out of your comfort zone and kind of do something different in a different company, even if it means a step down, learning from people who are much better than you. I mean, I had the opportunity to work with some of the best out there, both in Al Jazeera and then at Bloomberg. I mean, I have a view on this, which is that I think if you're not able to kind of swim with the best, I don't think you really can grow either way. So you'll always be in that small pond. So I would always suggest that you take a step down, even if it's a step down. I'm not saying go negotiate a step down. I'm saying even if it means you have to settle for something, to learn something new and grow, I think I would take it. I'd always take it.
Yeah, thank you. I want to switch gears a bit and talk about what you think got you to a leadership position at Bloomberg.
A few things. I think one, you need people to trust you, I think. I got very lucky. There were people at different parts of my life and career who kind of took big bets on me. I have no idea why. Someone took a big bet on me when I when I was at CNBC, you know, to kind of throw me into those jobs that I got there. It's the same in, you know, I had an incredible boss at CNBC, a guy called Senthil Chengalvarayan. And then the same with Bloomberg in Al Jazeera, and then Bloomberg, where you know someone thought I was old enough and good enough to go and kind of run a television network at the age of 30. I moved to Asia. I'll be honest, I didn't think I was ready enough, and but I did get the job, and back me up. I think so. That's one big thing, which is that some, you need people to trust you and back you. I think that's a really important thing. Two is, I think, be open to risks and be open to change. I think I have a big risk appetite. I'm not saying that's always good. That has flaws. That has both sides to it. You know, sometimes risks don't work out. But if you're working for a company that is, you know, that kind of respects that, and kind of backs you on it, it's hugely helpful. So now I did have the favorable condition of a company like Bloomberg, which kind of backed me up in some ways. But it's also about taking risks. You want to take risks. And also beyond the risks, you got to be able to actually be able to adapt. I think, you know, being able to adapt and kind of being able to change your strategy and everything else is absolutely crucial, because you might think you're right. A good number of times you're not. I think certainly in Bloomberg, that was a big learning for me, because I got in very young, hard-headed, brash, and I thought I was right always. And I think over time, you kind of realize that you're not. You kind of had to figure your way out, and some, you know, kind of give in to other ideas and kind of learn from those ideas. And fourth, I think surround yourself with the best people. I believe that you should always hire people much better than you. And there's no shame in saying that openly. And because if you aren't able to hire the best talent, you will not get the result, no matter what. So I think those are the kind of, as a leader, those have kind of helped me, kind of helped the businesses that I've worked on. And most of it is team effort. It's really not me. I'm just sitting on top of the pile. You know, having a team that actually helped build it and build it into what it is kind of really, really helps. So I would say these are not in a certain order, but it certainly helped me get to where I am.
Yeah, thank you for sharing this. So you talked a bit about surrounding yourself with the best people. And that leads me to the question about how was your experience working with people like Justin Smith and Mike Bloomberg? What did you learn from them? And what do you think they're doing differently, or how are they thinking differently about things?
It's quite amazing. I think some of them have a lot in common. And I've been very lucky to have worked for people who I, one, deeply respect, and who are friends, you know. My first boss at Bloomberg was Andy Lack, who's a legend in the TV space, you know, from where I come from. He went on to be the chairman of NBC. He was before that. I mean, he's had an illustrious career before Bloomberg. I learned a lot from him, which is, you know, on the content side and on how you run a television and media businesses, a business. From Justin, I think the biggest learning for me was innovation. I think he's a great believer in innovation. He's an innovator himself. I think he's a great digital innovator himself, with Quartz and, you know, everything. I mean, his background is entirely digital innovation, really. I learned a huge, great deal about innovation and how you should be completely uncompromised on innovation. You know, you kind of don't compromise on that part of your business, even if it means you take some short-term pain. In the long term, you should be able to disrupt and innovate. And I think he doesn't just believe in it. I think he kind of really, it's inherent to him. I don't think it's really what makes him. And Mike, of course, Mike Bloomberg, you know, he obviously is our founder, and frankly, Bloomberg is what Bloomberg is because of him, his personality. And a lot of, most of us are where we are because the system that he's built and the ecosystem he's built allows us to take those risks and innovate and think long term, and you know, he's got an incredible tolerance for that, and of course a personally brilliant man. You know, he went once, you know, once he decides something, he kind of knows exactly what to do, and there's a huge emphasis on execution. I think it's very easy to come up with ideas. If you don't execute them, it doesn't matter. And I think that there's a fairly big emphasis on execution, etc. And you can see that in the rest of the company. I think it's a company which really starts from the top. Most of Mike's personality and everything else kind of trickles down to the rest of the company, and you can see how successful it is, and it really comes from there.
Yeah. And do you, when you look back at your media career for over the past 10 years, have you seen, does any failure come to mind that has kind of set you up for later success?
Oh yeah, I mean, several failures. I mean, I think I learned more from my failures than my so-called successes. I've had some really, you know, early failures as well, which kind of in some ways set me up for what I am. I had one failure where I made a wrong deployment, and the person I deployed was fatally hurt. So I mean, that's an example. From that, I kind of learned how to deal with that, and deal with, you know, how you know, one, I think for me as a journalist, there's a big learning on how do you kind of have to learn that the people and the risks are the, you know, you got to weigh them in a different way. I think I did, but I think I could have done better, always done better. I think that was a big, you know, that was a learning. But again, even in business, I mean, I think even when after I joined Bloomberg, I've had many failures, which kind of, you kind of pick yourself up from it. I think the important thing is that even if you fail, fail fast. Fail as fast as you can and pick it up as quickly as you can. If you dwell on that failure, you're finished. I don't think you can ever recover from it. Don't dwell on failures. I think you basically spend time, yes, look back on it, do your postmortem in your head, but then move on. I think that's the important thing. Fail, but fail fast, and get up fast, and kind of move on from it. I think that's the important thing. And plenty of them. I mean, even business-wise, you try something, and that doesn't work, and you kind of move on, because the thing is, you know, you always get a second chance, and most of the time, you get a second chance, and if you work for a company, a good company, they give you many chances, because they know you're taking a risk, and those risks, if that fails, that's fine. It's completely fine to fail. I think those days are, I think now it's becoming more and more apparent to everyone, any company that you work for, where there is a tolerance to failure. I think everyone now knows that it's okay to fail. I think those days are gone where you fail once and you're out of the building. Not anymore. I think people have kind of realized that that's just not acceptable. And one, it's not acceptable. And two, it would be a huge mistake, you know, because that does, you know, the best talent I've ever worked with are people who have failed and come back in a big way. And I have to admit, I've always had a personal bias towards hiring people who have that in their history somewhere, because I think it makes them more human, more resilient, more, they can take a lot more than others can. And you know, I think they also end up being team players, because a failure teaches you it's not all about you, it's about a team.
Yeah. I mean, thank you so much for sharing that, because I think when people look at your career, they might see starting at CNN and then eventually rising to become managing director in a leadership position at Bloomberg and think it was like all a straight line, but actually
not at all.
It's not at all, isn't it?
Not at all. In fact, I would not call it a straight line at all. I mean, there were times even in my career where you think, oh my God, what have I done? Have I joined the right? Even when I took, the job here at Bloomberg the first time, the first 6 months were tough because I hadn't done this before, and I certainly haven't done it at this scale. I've done it before, but not at this scale. Because you're building it, it was not a running company, everything was not running perfectly. We were still building out media, and Bloomberg Media is huge, but in Asia, it was still very small at the time. So we were fixing it and building it. So, there were times then that I thought, my God, I don't know whether I can do this or whether I can pull it off. And then you kind of keep being persistent at it. It's never a straight line. I don't think I know anyone who's successful and friends who are successful in their own fields who ever had a straight line. I don't think anyone has a straight line. It just seems like it because when you look at a CV, everything seems like, it seems like a straight line. There are no gaps in there. It's not. It never is. You kind of learn from each jump and each experience.
Yeah. Earlier, you were talking about how doing a course in journalism and media doesn't necessarily fully prepare you for the job itself. So I was wondering what advice you would give to students about to enter the workplace, and also advice for people that are potentially interested in a career in media and journalism.
Yeah, I think, don't get me wrong, I do think the journalism school does put some foundation. That foundation is great. It's there are some things that journalism school teaches you which are really important being in there is, the way you write, the way you write, the certain fundamentals of journalism, sourcing, the ethical standards and editorial integrity, all that, all those basic foundations are built in a journalism school, which is great. Because, and I'm not saying that if you don't go through a journalism school, you don't learn it. You do, but it does lay out. It does give you an advantage. It does give you a foundation. What it cannot teach you, and it doesn't teach you, not because they're not trying. It's because it's actually not possible. Is how a newsroom functions. A newsroom and how you kind of function within a newsroom. I think, and that's changing, by the way. When I joined a newsroom, it was very different from someone joining a newsroom today. I think it's two different, completely different worlds. I didn't join a newsroom. I joined a newsroom not very long ago. But it's evolving every day. So that's something that I don't think a journalism school or anything can completely teach you. But it does prepare you for it in some ways. But I think. Once you are in journalism, or you want to get into a media field, I really do urge you to intern at places. And I did various internships and traineeships before I actually took the jump, because I really wanted to be sure this was it. This is something I wanted to do. And it's really, really important because it's not made for everyone. I always urge you to kind of, have an internship, even a pre-internship before you actually go for a journalism school, you straight out of grad school or something. Do internships, even if it's small internships, and learn how a newsroom functions or a media. When I say newsroom is one thing, but if you want to on the business side, it's the same thing. You need to figure out how those work. And most companies now are open to it. They want fresh young blood to come in and experience it. And it's a huge, for companies, it's a huge talent pool. Talent is getting younger and younger. In the social media age, at 40, I'm a fossil. So it's easier to get in and actually kind of learn how an entire newsroom functions. I really urge everyone to do it. It's done me amazing. You know, apprenticeships and internships have done wonders for me. It is kind of, in a lot of, it also prepared me for exactly what we are getting into, you know, and newsrooms can be tough, you know, newsrooms can be rough, tough. It's less rough now. It's more, you know, it still is tough. But it's, but these are places where things have to move fast. Everything happens in the minute. It's a high pressure, high, you know, intensity sort of, you know, sort of profession where everything is on the move. There's hardly any time. And within, because of that, everything is, you know, you kind of have to be able to love moving with that at that speed to actually really thrive in it, I think. And I'm talking about newsrooms, and there are various, you know, there are various branches of it. You know, there are people who are great at long form journalism that, you know, you can spend a little bit more time on it. So, you know, I'm not generalizing. I'm just saying that on a basic level, I think it always makes sense to actually to do an apprenticeship or an internship if possible. For anything, by the way, that's for not just journalism. I think that's for anything that you plan to do.
Yeah, 100% agree with you. I mean, I did an apprenticeship and it really was so useful. And it was something that, you know, I couldn't really otherwise get that kind of experience or insight if I just kind of read a textbook about something or at university. Not that there's a lot of benefit to university, but at the same time, getting an internship and practical experience in the workplace, I didn't think there's anything far that beats that. So yeah, you're 100%
right. I mean, there are times when you do an apprenticeship and you kind of figure out that this is not what you want to do.
Exactly.
That's also great, by the way, because that kind of, you know, it kind of takes you away from spending a lot of time trying to chase something that you perhaps don't like, you know? So I would always urge everyone to take that seriously. I think most people kind of do it just because they want to tick a box. But I think you should take it really seriously.
Yeah. So I'm going to move on to like a hypothetical question that I usually always ask on this podcast, which is, if it was many years from now and it's like the last day for you, and the articles you've written, like the social media posts, are all erased for some reason, and you can write down three things that you know about, of everything you know about life, a business or whatever it may be. So three things that you would leave to the world of your biggest lessons. What would those three things be?
Wow. What do those things be? Three things that I would leave. I'm assuming as a piece of wisdom. I would say be patient, I think, is one of them. Be really patient. I think it is the one thing that most people aren't. I'm not, I admit. But I think I've over the last few years, I've learned to be slightly more patient and persevere. Persevere is another one. No matter what, no matter how much you fall, persevere. It wouldn't have got me where I am, for sure, because that is the one thing that kept me going, and I've fallen quite a few times. Three is be passionate, I think. There is nothing that can substitute that. If you're not passionate about what you do and you don't love it more than anything else, doing anything else, apart from playing with my kids, I think you should not be in it. You should definitely not be in it. Passion is the most, I think, is absolutely crucial. Those are three life advices for anything in my life, I would say. And that's not just my career. I think it would be my personal life as well, to be pretty similar.
Yeah. Thank you. So now I'm going to move to a quick fire question. So I just want your gut response and the first thing that comes to your mind. If you don't like the question, you can pass too. The first question is, what are 1, 2, 3 books that have greatly influenced your life?
Wow. And I have to be really quick, right? Influence my life is a strong one, but I can name 3 books that really did impact me, I think. A book on history by E.H. Carr, which I learned very early, that was that made a huge difference to me, I think, in the way I thought about a lot of things. What else? God, I'm just blanking out on the others. This is the one that comes really to mind immediately. I'll just pass it and go on to the next one, and then I'll come back to it if I have to. But yeah.
No worries. If you had the chance to have like a dinner party and you could invite three people, dead or alive, who would you invite and why?
Whoa, I think that's a good one. For various reasons, various people. I think Gandhi. I would love to meet Mahatma Gandhi, and it's not for the usual thing. It's, you know, he's father of our nation, but I think he's just so different from what I am. I don't think you kind of, now when you look back, you admire and respect, but you're not entirely sure. You kind of are curious about the human being, you know, and his philosophy is very different from what even I believe in, but it's fascinating. So that's one. John Kenneth Galbraith, I met him once actually. So but I'd still count him as someone I would love to meet. He's an economist, fascinating guy. And third one, Emperor Akbar from India. I think it would be fascinating to meet a guy like him.
Great. And the last question on the quickfire round is, what are you most grateful for?
I'm grateful for my family. I think that is, you know, it's completely unsaid, but it is the big rock behind me, really. Without my parents, you know, to begin with, and then my wife and kids, I don't think I could have been anywhere where I am today. I mean, I travel 100 days a... I used to travel 100 days a year, all the way for the last 10 years.
Oh.
And literally, my kids are 6 and 4. So I've not spent, you know, I spent a lot of time outside. But if my wife complained, I don't think I could have done anything. But she kind of backed me up and went with it. So I think family is the most important. Everything else is secondary.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. Good. I think I'm going to leave it there. We've been able to cover a lot, and you shared some really great insights and advice. Thank you so much for agreeing to have this conversation. I think it's going to help a lot of young people who also want to learn from people like you and ask these questions. So yeah, thank you for everything, and look forward to speaking again soon.
No, thank you. Thank you. It was fascinating. I hope this is helpful to someone.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot.